from seclusion, from an isolated place, right? And then it says that the angel comes down, this what I just said, and then the angel said, I'm just a message from God, who is your sustainer, and I have for you a gift from God, a son, a pure son that will be born from you, what I just said. So, and she said, just said that, how can I have a son when no one touched me and all that. And then it says that this is how God wills, right, from his grace. And this is a decree of decree of God. And she withdrew. This is the message here. So, and I think the more basics of it, I think Peaceman can explain, right? But I would just like to mention some more things here. So Jesus was born, according to the Muslims, without a father, which is obviously different from the Christian tradition, which said that he was the son of God, or he was God. According to Islam, he was just a human being, and God says in the Quran that the likeness of Jesus is the likeness of Adam. In other words, the concept here is, what God is illustrating here is that he does not have to use a father or parent to create human beings, just human beings, just like Adam had no father or mother. And Mary and the first woman also, Eve, did not have a mother as well. So that's what God is explaining here, that he does not have to use a parent for a child to be born. So this is a miracle from God. And he is seen as a prophet sent to the people of the tribe of Israel, like it says in the Bible as well. And basically this is the concept that God is explaining. I mean, we also respect Prophet Jesus. We as one of the greater prophets, you see, of sent to the people. So this is the basic idea here. So about the details, I would like Peaceman to explain what the details are of his annunciation and his birth.
Jazakumullah khair. Thank you, Brother Ibran. Now the main concept here is the concept of God. So who is the God? And the challenge for the human being, the test that the human being goes through, is to see, to test the human being if they understand the right concept of who God is. You know, who is this God? So we got to start all the way from the beginning to Adam, the first human being, the father of all human beings. He believed in God, the one and only. And after him, what happened to people? No, that's the way God made this world. They started going corrupted. They started going wrong. So God, through his mercy, he sent them messengers, and he sent them prophets to guide them to the true belief in God. All the prophets, they came with the same message. No, worship God.
And that's you know, I don't mean to cut you off, but it's the point, I think, what we were trying to, you know, illustrate, I think, just for the audience, is that, how, you know, obviously, the show is about building stronger communities after 9/11. The point is that, you know, this is a common, I mean, I think anybody who heard that, Christian, a Jew, even somebody who doesn't follow the monotheistic faiths, they can agree with that message, is that we have to follow the guidance that's been sent to us by our Creator. And I think that's something that, you know, most religious traditions share, even, you know, among native religious traditions, they had the same concept, that we have to go back to a deep spirituality and connection to our Creator. And that you know, I think those verses really illustrate that. I do, I have another question I'd like to just throw out to our studio audience here, and it's, what is the action plan for the future? What can we do? And in terms of action, how can we, you know, what is the best way to begin? How can we go about establishing these communities? What are some specific things we can do as individuals within our communities? And I just got a call in from somebody from the web. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Assalamu alaikum.
Peace be with you. What's your name?
My name is Shazia.
Well, welcome to the program. I'd like you to, did you have any comments or questions for the program?
Just one thing that you guys were talking about earlier was that phrase that was mentioned, that people on September 11th hijacked Islam. And Imran, on the show, he talked about how at first, when he first heard that phrase, he felt very, like, ill at ease with that phrase. And that's something that I can really relate to, because I think a lot of Muslims, a lot of people who actually practice Islam, don't like the fact that these people kind of took over the reputation of Islam. But in truth, they didn't hijack Islam. They didn't hijack the core teachings of Islam. They didn't hijack what the texts say. So that's something that they didn't hijack Islam. They hijacked the reputation of Islam. They hijacked its image. But Islam in and of itself is still the same. It still has its core teachings. And I think one of the most important things we need to do as Muslims, as we began to talk about, was just to let people know what these core teachings are, to let people know what Islam is really about.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about a strategic plan we should have for the future, and I think also another guest on your program, I think his name was Ehsan, he talked about using the internet, using technology, and I think as someone who's very active in the internet community, I think that's something that we as Muslims should take advantage of, because we need a lot of alternatives to mainstream media, because we can't really rely on them to give a good image of what Islam is really about, an accurate image of it. So I think taking advantage of alternatives to the mainstream media, like the internet, for example, or like alternative radio, like WRPI, is really something that Muslims should look into.
Absolutely. Seven, I do know that you have some experience working on the internet, I know, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about what internet communities are like, and maybe you can relate your experience with the Medina community a little bit, on how that's helped build a stronger collective community of Muslims, and you can take your time, you know, you don't have to rush, so.
Okay, I tend to speak very quickly, I apologize for that, especially when I'm nervous, but the Medina community is actually just an online message board where people come and they ask questions and they have discussions and they share experiences, and I think right now we have something like 450 members from all over the world, a lot of people in the United States, a lot from Canada, but also from places like Singapore, Malaysia, India, England, Africa, all over the world. So it's really like a very international community, and you see a lot of different perspectives. And the theme of the Medina is actually just to let people know what Islam is about, to learn about Islam from the practitioners. We don't have any scholars or experts on Islam there, but just people who practice Islam every day really struggle to learn more about the faith. So one thing we've seen very recently, especially after the September 11th incidents, were a lot of non-Muslims coming to onto the message board and asking questions about Islam, because I think it really piqued people's interest. And I think people are very frustrated with the mainstream media and the images they continue to perpetuate about Islam. So I think they're looking for alternatives. They're looking for, you know, the truth. They're looking for what this is really about.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of, you know, very interested non-Muslims coming in, and I think we're able to give them a more accurate perspective of what Islam is about.
Definitely. I personally am very, very, indebted to the kind folks on the Medina Community Message Board, and I'd really, if I ever get to meet them, I'd like to, you know, send my thanks to them, and I hope they can appreciate. I hope I can one day appreciate, you know, what they've all done, and it's really like a virtual community, and I think that's something that we need to do as Muslims, since we are so small in number that we can reach out through the medium of the internet. Ehsan, do you have any perspective on that?
Yeah, just one thing I wanted to say is I was very pleased when we would hear on the radio soon after the attacks, when people would see what the media was portraying about Muslims in general, and they would say, no, that's not true, because I know a Muslim, you know, or I know Muslims, and that's not how they are, you know. And I think it's great that there are Muslims out there that, through their character and through their kind deeds and acts, other people take notice, and they know that that's not Islam, and you know, these people are either corrupt or, you know, not real Muslims because of what they understand from their own experiences about interactions with Muslims around them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be great if more people could see that, because that's not what the general consensus was of everyone when the media would portray something, and they'd say, oh no, it's not that way, because we know Muslims, you know, do all these things. If we had, of course, charity is a huge part of our religion, and the more people can see our character and the way that we are, if we try to portray Islam as correctly as possible, then more people would understand and immediately reject any falsehood that they may be fed about Islam, because they would understand and they would draw from their experiences and people they know, and they would say, no, Islam's not this way, because I know Muslims and they're like this and they're like that. I think it's great that there are people that have seen that, And I think it would be better if they were, that if more people could
definitely
realize that.
Definitely. We're almost out of time. We got about 5 minutes left in the talk portion of our program. The number in the studio here is 518-276-6248. We are going to be on from 11 to 12 p.m., 11 to 12 a.m., sharing with you some of the different cultural programs that we have. We have some Quran here and some music from the Muslim world, Rehan and Zane, somebody, and we'll be playing that. But Seven, I want to ask you one quick question. I think one thing that a lot of people are asking is, what can we do as, like, you know, people, if you're in school, what can you do in your school? If you're at work, what can you do at work? And if you're a stay-at-home mom, a soccer mom or something, what can they do? Can you tell us a little bit about that, Seven?
I think it's actually something that I mentioned yesterday, but I think the first thing that we need to do is educate ourselves, is to really, as a Muslim, find out what Islam really teaches about these things. And then once we come to educate ourselves like that, we should go out and educate other people. I think now of all times is not a time to be ashamed or shy about what our faith is about. This is a great opportunity to go out there and tell people what Islam is about. So I think first it's education of ourselves, first to make sure we go out there and we learn our faith properly. And then from that, go out there and let people know what this faith is about. Go to attend some of these interfaith programs that Mona was speaking about earlier. If there's no programs like that in your community, set some up. Use these alternative forms of media to go out there and teach people what Islam is about, like the radio or like the internet. I think ultimately it comes down to just education, learning what the faith is about.
So, Imran, we actually we have a caller with us on the line, Rich from Troy. He wanted to ask about something I think is very, very important. That is, I'll let him ask a question. Rich, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi, Rich. Please, go ahead.
My question has to do is, as I see it in many religions where they look up to a person like a cleric who understands, say, the Quran or what the religion is about, but the general population can't read it for themselves, or they don't, maybe they can't read themselves, or they don't know Arabic, and so there, any time where there's an interpretation, clerics can lead these people astray, because there's no way with their own intellect that they can really sort out what's right or wrong.
Okay.
What it means is somehow with this whole program has to go an education so they can sort it out for themselves, make them think for themselves, rather it's just like, this is what it says.
Okay. Are you done, Rich?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, about education, the Prophet Muhammad, I'll just quote his tradition. He said that Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said that seeking knowledge is compulsory on every man and every woman. First of all, ignorance is not tolerated in Islam. In Islam, we cannot be ignorant of our own tradition. So everybody should have some knowledge about the tradition. That when some scholar, so he has to have knowledge about the Arabic language. I think it's very important to learn the Arabic language, to learn the revelation in its original language. Now, as you said, not everybody can do that, but everybody should have some knowledge about the revelation. And the way we can judge who is telling the truth is that we have to actually know that person. See, God says in the Quran that the most noble of you are those who are most God conscious. So the way we judge is what is this person's behavior? Is he following? Does he fear God? Is he conscious of God? Is he some person on the street that's misleading people? So first of all, a person should have enough knowledge to judge the person, and then we go on from there. I think that I hope that clarifies. If you have any,
I think one other important point is that in Islam there is no Ecclesiastes. So we don't take things from scholars. We learn from them. I think that's the critical thing. But we don't accept. We never blindly accept anything from scholars.
We don't follow any church authority or anything like that. It's not binding.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I just wanted to say that a misconception that I think continues to be perpetuated in the media is this notion that a lot of Muslims are brainwashed. Like, I see a lot of imagery of Muslims being brainwashed in these madrasas, and I think that's something that's very inconsistent with the tradition of Islam, as Imran was talking about. I mean, again, like Faisal said, there is no clergy in Islam, and it's incumbent on every Muslim to learn and study this faith themselves, to make sure it makes sense to them, not only spiritually, but rationally as well. There's a verse in the Quran that says that you cannot follow this faith blindly from your forefathers. It's really something that you have to take upon yourself to understand rationally and intellectually.
Then it doesn't, to me, seem to be working that way. It seems like there's a cleric or somebody handing down.
No, actually, yeah.
What is the truth?
I think that comes from people not practicing Islam in its true form. I think that in a lot of these countries where perhaps we see that the level of education and literacy among the majority of people is not very high. So perhaps that's what stems from this level of poverty and lack of education. Not so much from the faith itself.
And there's also a perception that Muslims are like these emotional, angry mobs of people, and somebody will come out and, you know, they call it the Arab Street now.
Right.
And I think that's really a misconception, because if you look at the scholars of Islam and their reaction after September 11th, and I have yet to see a single scholar who condoned the attacks of September 11th. And so it really what it points out to is that ignorance by on the part of Muslims is what leads to violence and, you know, hatred and things like that. I think there are some rare occasions, like with the Ayatollah Khomeini and Salman Rushdie, but that, I think that's really isolated. What we're talking about now, a lot of the distortion of the religion that takes place is by Muslims that don't know their own religion. But those that have become enlightened, they become more tolerant, because this is a religion of tolerance, and it's those who lack a coherent understanding and the proper understanding of the faith. I think that's really where the errors come in. And I think I don't want to go too far off topic, but you know, the criminals and that have been indicted, many of them, I mean, if you look at just the nights before, they're in bars, they're in strip clubs, they had girlfriends. These are all things that are completely against the teachings of Islam. So what happens is people manifest their own wishes and whims and they use their religion as an excuse to perpetuate their vengeance.
Can I interrupt you here? Because maybe you're missing the point of my question. All right? Let's say I didn't know anything about any religion, or I walked out of the mountain someplace and had pagan religion. And somebody hands me the Old Testament and tells me this is what Jews believe, and they hand me the Torah or whatever, the Torah, and then some of the other books of the Bible. And they said, this is what we believe. You read it. And this is what a Jew is. And then they can hand me the New Testament along with what, you know, is in the Christian Bible. And they can say, well, we got the Old Testament and we got this New Testament. Now, read it yourself and become, if you want to follow this. What can Islam hand me that I can read on my own as an intellectual person to make a decision? If I could read Arabic, then I could become an Muslim from the Quran? I could understand it from the Quran? Or is there more books?
I would just like to make a comment that there are English translations of the Quran, and we can recognize that what we now see commonly used English forms of Bibles and Torahs, those are also translations.
Right.
They were not originally revealed in English. So in terms of whether or not you're getting the actual letter per letter revelation in its original form, you don't get that by picking up a Bible or Torah in English either. That's the limits of not understanding the original Arabic or Hebrew that the book was revealed in, but you can pick up a English translation of the Quran and read it for yourself, you know, perhaps with commentary, and that's something that you would be able to read like you would be able to read a Bible or Torah, books of the New and Old Testament. I'm not sure if that answers some of your question. Or
I'd also like to throw in that the two things that everyone follows as Muslims in Islam are from the Quran and the Sunnah. The Quran is the revealed holy book, and the Sunnah is what the Prophet did, said, and silently approved of. And that was based on his immense knowledge from Islam. I also wanted to mention before about how we may take things from people we believe are more God-conscious. In Islam, no person has more is held high in a higher position in God's eyes, of course not literal but metaphorical. No one is held in a higher position in God's eyes than that who fears God more. As, like, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're black, white, short, you know, rich, male, female. People are held higher based on their God consciousness. And there are some people that may seem to be highly, high in God's eyes, and like they'll seem to give a lot of money and they'll seem to know a lot of things, and they may be fake. They may not actually believe in those things, and it's our duty to try to seek out those who are God conscious and who do have a high level of faith, and try to understand from them, because they may understand things and be able to just be able to understand verses of the Quran more than maybe we do. And I would also suggest to read different translations of the Quran in English.
Of what?
Different translations of Quran in English.
Yeah, but you said Quran and then another book?
Oh, no, it's not a book. The Sunnah. Sunnah is what the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, did, and silently approved of, because his move, every
which
move...
Which is collected in a series of books.
Right,
also.
Right.
Does that come with the Quran, usually?
No. The Quran itself is the holy
book.
It's
the word of God.
No, I thought somebody might have put them together in a book and you could take it out at the library or something.
Faisal, maybe you could make some book recommendations. I know a few days ago you mentioned a very good book by Thomas Cleary.
Right. Well, you know, there's a few points I'd like to bring up. Well, the Quran, as Ehsan mentioned, is quite accessible. And Muslims, we didn't really have the problem that the Christian church originally dealt with earlier. The Bible was not written in the language of the people. Like, it was originally in Hebrew and then Latin, and it remained in Latin. And one of Galileo's crimes that he was tried for was translating the Bible into Italian, because the church held it above the people that they could not understand the Quran. But yet, the Quran itself tells people, do not take your rabbis, your priests, your leaders as gods by letting them interpret the Quran for you. So it does tell the people to learn, understand, interpret it for themselves. So it is quite accessible. And if you do look in the Quran, there's not a lot of room for a lot of people memorize the Quran without understanding a single word. And I think the caller is making a good point, that in the Muslim world, especially, I think here in the U.S. it's a little bit better, but in the Muslim world it's almost idolized, which is a very dangerous thing, where it's memorized and it's not really taken into the heart. And if you read the Quran, it's full of questions, really, more than anything. And very little of it is actual commands, you know, to do this, don't do that. It really just prods the heart to reflect on God, as Peaceman had mentioned earlier. And the collection of hadith, which are the prophetic sayings, they were meticulously analyzed, and their chains of narration were verified by certain scholars and collected in books, and those are also available. But I think in the Barnes & Noble, the best, the most commonly available books are more poetry, and there is Qur'ans available. There's a very, very good translation out now by Dr. Thomas Clear. It's called The Essential Qur'an, and it's in the bargain book section, so it's like only, I think it's $8, something
like
that.
I think I've seen it there.
Yeah, it's $8, and it's very...
You know, which one was intellectually more superior, you know, the books I've seen.
Dr. Thomas Cleary is very spiritual, and I think he has a good feel for the Quran, so he's able to give it good... I think very few people have actually read the Quran and said, oh, I can't believe it said this or that, because it's very fair in its treatment of women, a lot about women's rights and slaves, etc. But what they do say is it's confusing, and it is confusing for the person who first approaches it, and it is for Muslims as well. And I hope that doesn't turn away people. But Dr. Thomas Cleary does a good job in his introduction of really giving the reader an understanding of what the Quran is actually, the meaning of it, because it doesn't really have a historical narration. It doesn't flow like a story, because it is it really, it's trying to get you to think. It's not really telling you anything, and it leaves out any extra details. Peaceman, you wanted to make a comment about this also?
Yes.
Let me make just one comment.
Sure.
Somebody on television said that you really have to know the Quran in Arabic. It should be read in Arabic, and it's like reading it in Arabic is like spiritual, or that's the way it has to be attended. This was a TV, you know, one of a group of people on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you don't know who's right here.
Right. Mm. Did you hear the verses that we played earlier in the program, sir?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a beautiful language, and that's sort of mesmerizing.
Yeah, that's probably the main reason. I think as Muslims, Irfan, go ahead.
Yeah, like as Muslims, the thing is that the Quran itself is such a beautiful language, and it's a powerful language. And while like it's true that like you can't really get at the essence, or like not really the essence, but you can't get at the real like
beauty
of the Quran without knowing the Arabic language. At the same time, the essence can be apprehended in any time or any place you open up the Quran. You essentially get the same message, which is that Allah wants people, or God wants people, to submit to His will, and that through Him that you achieve peace. And this is a central message. Any time you pick up the Quran, no matter what chapter, this is something that will reappear and reappear and reappear. And it's a message really for mankind, all of mankind. And there's not really a hierarchy that can say, okay, well, I know what the Quran's saying, and you don't know what the Quran's saying. Or there's not really this religious hierarchy. It's every individual. And in Islam, we believe that what happens with the people who read Quran, it the amount of intellect that person has is the amount of wisdom that he can ascertain from that Quran. And that is not like a sin or anything like that, because everyone's at their own level of knowledge or own level of understanding. So everyone can benefit in some way or another into their own life and can incorporate into their own life. Like they're saying, there's a lot of translations out there. Some of them are pretty dubious or whatever, but the point is, you know, like to get a balanced translation. And some translators that I would like to mention that have a balanced translation is Abdullah Yusuf Ali has a great translation in English. It's probably one of the older translations in English. Besides him, you have a convert by the name of Muhammad Pickthall, who converted actually in the 1800s. He's a British convert to Islam, and he has a great translation as well.
This really brings up a good point. The translator, the more that you have in common with the translator or interpreter, the more I think you'll benefit from it.
Right.
And the Western translators, Abdullah Yusuf Ali is originally from India, so I think for a Westerner to read that, it doesn't benefit him as much. But Muhammad Asad, who was originally, his name was Leopold Weiss, he was a Jewish man from Austria who became Muslim, and he interpreted the Quran. He really, you understand it from a Western paradigm, which is, because a lot of understanding other cultures is paradigm shift. It's not just information.
Oh, definitely.
If you study cultural, breaking down cultural barriers and stuff, you really can't just get the information about the culture. You have to go to that place and like experience what it is to be immersed within that culture. And I think that's why like today we got internet and video and everything. But it still doesn't. It's not the same when you unless you travel to a certain country or land. But I think it would be, you know, I really think that the Quran is really accessible. And
let me just make another comment that you could comment on. Because I think we've battered that around quite a bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
As you probably know, our founding fathers were pretty much theists, which to me, as I understand it, like Thomas Jefferson and these people, they thought God got things started and he doesn't really put his hand in things anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's, the rest is natural. So to us people who think strictly intellectually and kind of go that way, that word submit is the one that probably really turns people off, because, like even in our Bible, we've been taken, like the woman should submit to her husband. We've been getting rid of that word in many more liberal churches. And the idea of submitting to God, it seems like, from my background of Western religion, what we do is try to love thy neighbor as theirself. I think some Jewish rabbi might have even said, what is the real meaning of Judaism or whatever? He says, love thy neighbor as thyself. All the rest is commentary. rather than submit to God. Because when you submit to God, sometimes that submitting means crashing into a tower.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think there's a one thing is, all right, if you do look at as God as a disembodied figure or the highest being in a hierarchy of being, somebody that, you know, wound up the clock and let it run, and
right.
then if you submit to that, it's like you're submitting yourself to some outside power. But the way a Muslim looks at it is that God's hand is in all of creation, and the way that a molecule circles its nucleus, the way that trees grow, the way that the planets rotate, we see the hand of God in all of creation. And submitting doesn't really mean like this thing you impose on yourself. It's harmonizing yourself with God's laws. So it's really bringing the heart into harmony with the spiritual order of things. It's not really, you know, like idolizing, because even the concept of God can become idolatry if we don't really understand his spirituality, the spiritual attributes of God. So some people might say they're worshiping God, and really they're not really in harmony. So I think that the concept of submission is not, it's not from any Muslim, I think if you ask them, it maybe it has a negative connotation, but we see it more as something that brings about harmony within the psyche, you know, all the psychic turbulence is at peace because we're within this greater universe that, because Islam, what the root word it comes from, is like you said, submission, but it means, the word itself means peace. So peace through harmonization with the divine order is what a Muslim looks at it as. So I guess what you're saying is that some people, they might want to crash into planes because of God. I really...
I think, like you said before, I was listening when you talked about hijacking, that word submit, these people submitted themselves. They were drinking alcohol and everything, but they did this for the greater good. They submitted to this person who told them to crash.
I would really disagree with that, because I think they submitted to their own lower self of vengeance. I think that's what it really was.
I would like to think that, but I...
Because it really, if you look at it from a theological perspective, it's like totally just absurd for these guys to think that they're doing something.
I looked at it from a psychological perspective, where we have all kinds of cases where people are under this apocalyptic control, like the person who had the seraphim gas in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Those people were definitely like under his control. Mm-hmm. And Jim Jones in Guyana, that was a Christian thing, they were under somebody's, they weren't thinking for themselves.
Hmm. Mona, what do you think of that?
I just wanted to explain what submission to God means to me personally. I think that the way that Islam explains God's relationship to his creation, and especially to, you know, to human beings, is that of a great deal of love. I think that we believe that God loves you, I mean, more than your mother, more than any human being possibly could. So submitting to God is really freeing yourself from a submission to anything worldly, you know, and you're putting yourself in the hands of a creator that knows everything about you, because he is the creator and you are the creation, and he loves you and wants the best for you. So anything that he ordains, anything that he says is for your best interest and for your attainment of true peace in this life and in the hereafter.
If I could just say something, what happens, unfortunately, sometimes is people will try to use religion, like Faisal said, to justify their own means. For example,
I agree with that completely.
You know what I mean? If someone, let's say someone did something bad to me, and then an injustice, and then I wanted to go and give revenge, like fivefold over what he did, and I would say that is justice in my view, you know
right.
what I mean? And I would say, and Islam is about justice, so that's what I'm going to do, you know what I mean? He slapped me on the hand, and I'm going to go, you know, whatever, I don't want to say, but you know, like, if someone will, you know, slap my hand, and then I go burn their house, for example, you know what I mean? It's not,
right.
not only did I counter what they did to me, I went overboard. But I think, in my own twisted way, that that's justice somehow, because I was angered, and I allowed myself to get angry. There are a lot of parts of Islam that you have to take everything into effect. Someone can take a verse out of the Quran and be like, see, it says this, thus I can do that. It's also, I believe in the Quran, correct me if I'm wrong, that killing you, it is forbidden to kill innocent man, woman, and child. And
but the verse that's been often quoted after September 11th is that one who kills one soul, it is as though he or she has killed all of humanity, and one who saves a soul, it is as though he or she has saved all of humanity. But also, I mean, the principle of killing an innocent person, it's not hard to find that it goes against Islam and many other religions. I mean, Muslims accept the Ten Commandments, as do Christians and Jews. Thou shalt not kill is a pretty clear thing. It's obvious that this is a manipulation of the faith.
I just wanted to make a comment. The way that I, just to bring it back to what you were talking about earlier about submission, I think you were kind of relating that to the free will of man.
I can't quite hear her.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I not speaking loud enough?
Go ahead. I think you're okay now.
Okay. The way that it was taught to me is that Islam is kind of a middle way in the understanding of the free will of man. We're not on one extreme thinking that we're like feathers in the winds of God and we have no control over anything that happens. So we don't have blind submission in that sense, but we feel like whatever we do, we don't have any accountability for that. And then the other extreme is that we're masters of our own fate and God has nothing to do with anything. Islam says that God has knowledge of everything that occurs and he allows everything to occur. But we are also granted free will. We're granted the ability to discern between right and wrong. We're granted an intellect, a heart. We're granted these things so we're able to consciously understand what is right and wrong. We don't have that concept of just being a feather in the wind of God, and we don't use the things we've been endowed with to understand what's right and wrong.
Yeah. Is that in the Quran? What, or just a personal kind of thing?
That's something that I've been taught, and I think that comes from the Quran and the teachings of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him.
Well, you know, there's a famous prophetic tradition that's been verified, and there was a man who had brought his camel and went to a mosque to pray, and he left his camel outside, and he said, I trust in God that God will take care of my camel. And when he came out, his camel was gone, and he was upset. He goes to the prophet, and he says, what happened to my camel? And the prophet said, next time, tie your camel.
So and trust in God.
And then trust in God.
And that you do both.
So this is, I think that's been the prophetic teaching. One example that I think really makes a lot of sense is a farmer, if he has a bag of seeds and he just sits there and prays all day that God will grow his seeds, and he's disappointed when harvest time comes. And then you have the other extreme of like a farmer who plants all his seeds and everything, and he doesn't pray at all, and God doesn't send rain, and then his crops don't grow, and he's left barren. So the Muslim, well, we look at it is that God, we do our part. You know, we have to give the what they call the sabab or the means, and then God provides the, so there we do our part, and then what's beyond us, that is within the realm of God. And that I think that provides a sense of psychic stability to a human being, because we know it says in the Quran, this verse is in the Quran, we do not burden a soul more than it can carry. Mm-hmm. So we know we're responsible for what we can do, and that's what we'll be asked about when we leave this place. But What happens in the rest of the world, we don't have to worry about, because that's in the hands of God. That's you know, what really brings peace to the heart of a Muslim. The other thing about, you know, these Muslims that, you know, it seems like they're zombies, just crashing planes into buildings and stuff. There's 1.6 billion Muslims on the planet. 1.6 billion. So you could just, by random, like, mutation of brain cells, you're going to get some wackos that are going to crash. It's not. I mean, you have David Koresh. You have who's the guy? Baruch Goldstein. You have all these people that. It really doesn't have anything to do with the religion.
Right.
It has to do with their own hatred. And then, you know, when you have hate in your heart, or if you're sick in your mentality, you can do things like this. And I think that's the real root. It doesn't really have anything to do with Islam itself or submitting to God.
Well, I agree with all that. You know, there's kooks everywhere. But me personally, I know the oil in the world's going to be maxing out in 10 years or so, maybe 20 at most. And we're going to have to be less hurtful to the earth in order for all of us to survive. And it seems that perhaps Islam is actually the religion that does less damage to the world, but it might be just that it hasn't gotten the chance to do its damage. You know, in other words, all those people that are poor in Islam or Muslim, they would drive cars just like the rest of us and everything else if they had their chance.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of looking for a way out that when the energy starts running out, you know, my own thing is Buddhists seem to be pretty gentle on the earth. But
yeah, we have a lot we can learn from each other, and that's the hopefully what we tried to get across in this program is really benefiting from each other's traditions.
Yeah.
And I really want to thank you for calling up and sharing your ideas. And there's definitely a time for interesting.
Well, I'm a 70 graduate of RPI.
Oh, I just graduated this morning, so.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I think, did you have a comment, Irfan?
Yeah, I would just like to say, like, a lot of things that we're talking about tonight, like this hatred that comes for ourselves, is a lower self. And I think Buddhism also has the same principles when you talk about the sevenfold path of Buddha. It's like a lot of things comes from the ego. And this thing about submission also comes from the ego. A lot of times, because we're raised in this Western civilization, it has a lot of individual, like, kind of connotations that people, even if you're a student and a teacher, the relationship in a lot of ways is not the same. Even though I might not know anything about the subject, I don't want to feel that I have to submit myself to the teacher who might know, like, he might have a whole bunch of, like, years at the subject. And I think a lot of things have to do with our lower self, which is our nafs. In Arabic, which we call this the nafs. And the greatest jihad that we know from the Prophet, alayhi salam, was that it's to fight the nafs. It's to fight your lower self, which is the cause of hatred, which is the cause of destruction. Like, hatred leads to destruction. This is a universal teaching of all religions, really. Even so, I think, like, in all religions, you really have your own extremists as well. Even in Buddhism, like, if you study, like, in recent history, they had, like, I think in a couple years ago, they had clashes between different Buddhist temples and whatnot. So,
oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not an illustration of the faith, but people who have gone away from and submitted, instead of submitting to themselves to a higher authority, which instead, if you submit yourself to God, you're bringing out the best of your humanity.
Mm.
That's what it's all about, the best of your spirit, the best of your spirituality.
I wonder when they translated whatever Arabic word, as you say, into submit.
Yeah.
That submit is a tough word for
exactly.
Westerners, and it might be a better word.
Yeah.
In the English language.
Right, there might be a better word, but I really, there could be a better word. Actually, the word is aslama in Arabic, and it's actually more, not submission out of fear, it's submission out of love.
It's a loving
yeah.
Right.
It's
and
like
somehow
that,
you see,
right.
If you look it up in the dictionary, there's a first meaning, a second meaning, but whatever. Or maybe submit in the dictionary has nothing to do with fear and love. Maybe it's just a neutral word. But we have put negative things to it.
Right. The Arabic, it means peace. The core, the root of the word Islam means peace. And that is through the surrender of one to God. So it's the ego is the thing that just kind of the monkey wrench in the works that just screws you up, you know. And so giving that up, and you ultimately attain peace through that surrender. Peace, man, did you have...
Oh, yes, yes. Rich, thank you very much for calling. I have to go back to the beginning here. This is not a couple. The first comment that you made was about taking the priests and other people for the word. What happens is everybody is responsible for themselves.
Exactly.
The way God made this world, in the day of judgment, people are going to have to be paid back for the actions that they do. And whatever actions that a person does, he's going to be responsible for it. God is not going to hold somebody responsible for what somebody else did. So what people they have to do, they have to follow the truth. They have to follow the reality, what is right. Not follow what is incorrect. Not follow the wrong statements of the devil. And what the greatest truth and the reality is God. He's a creator. He's a controller. He's a reality. So what we have to do is we have to learn more about God.
Have you ever heard this? If you see the Buddha, kill the Buddha.
Well,
what it means is this. You have to learn for yourself. This one Buddha was teaching another person, and he finally got his point across by saying, if you see the Buddha, you kill the Buddha. Because what he meant was, whatever the Buddha is saying, even though he's the Buddha, don't take it. And I think it's a question of education so that people can find out what is true in the Quran for themselves. And the same is true of all the other religions.
Mm-hmm. What happens is, there's one creator of this world, there's one controller of this world, and this world, there's truths here, and there's falsehoods here. So So what are you going to do? Is we've got to follow the truth and the reality.
Oh, but searching, figuring out the truth from the untruth is...
It's very difficult.
That's the task.
That's very true.
It is, but when someone's sincere, God guides you, and you pray, and you search, and you use your intellect in your heart.
Well, thank you, Rich.
All right.
We kept you for a while, but I really appreciate
it. No, I enjoy it.
And may, you know, I hope you have a, you know, I'm glad that you're open-minded and willing to, you know, talk with us. And
I hope you pick up a Quran. And I also want
to... Oh, yeah, I've been looking for one, but I didn't realize that one that was in the bargain thing would be any good. Oh, why would it be? See, we make judgments. It's in the bargain thing. How could it be that good?
I also wanted you to know that, like, there's also commentary for it's not word-for-word translation, because some Arabic words are, of course, very hard to explain, and they're in commentary. It's explained more in length to try to get a better gist of the word.
Yeah,
but I think we should work on getting a better word to submit or define it better.
Mm.
The idea of out of love and not out of fear, because fear is what comes to people's minds.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, culturally, those are the connotations that we carry as Americans.
Yeah.
After she said love.
All right.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you,
Rich.
Bye-bye. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Maybe we should teach Arabic on here on the station. I know how we would tell them how to draw it, though. You know how to draw the letters?
We could describe it, I guess. I don't know.
Like, if people could use their imagination, then that would just cause a whole...
The Arabic actually is a very essential part of the language of the Quran. I don't know, we got kind of off topic. I don't know, we're probably... I think if we don't have any other callers, the number is 518-276-6248. I guess we can wrap up... in a few minutes. I just have a couple other really key issues we'd like to get out.
We only have 1,000 products left. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Wrong commercial.
We will, okay.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm just trying to break it up a little bit.
It's getting late here in the studio, quite obviously. So we're going to have to spare our audience any further suffering. We will now go off the air. Okay, what we have is, there's a few other key points that... Amal had emailed us about, and I hope, let's just see really quickly. He said, unity and integration within the Muslim community, sources of division, those that are born here versus those that convert to Islam. Imran, Irfan, but Imran, you mentioned something.